They'll take their seat. We'll start with Cameron, the last session of the day before we go off to the reception. So if you can take your seat. Cameron, you're here, I believe. Is your mic on?
It should be on.
Excellent.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
You can hear me.
Know not to go that way.
Don't go that way. Bleeding ears.
Exactly.
Got it.
All right.
Excellent. So I am in the position of being the guy between you, hot food, and drinks. We could do one of two things. We can either do this presentation.
I have to do this presentation?
All right. I was going to do the agile thing. We can do it or not do it, depending on how bad people want to go eat. Okay. My name is Cameron Skinner. I am a general manager here at Visual. Actually, I work for Microsoft. I don't work for Visual Studio. I'm a general manager on the Visual Studio Ultimate team. So what you can take from that is the team that brings you the Visual Studio Ultimate product as well as the premium product. In 2010, as you know, we've changed the SKU structure around. So you've got the Express, Visual Studio Professional, Premium, and Ultimate, and everything is a Russian doll model. Everything goes up into Ultimate. My team owns various features in that tool set, such as the debugger, which I think some of you probably used. Visualization technology is new in 2010. So the DGML standard graphs, the UML diagrams in 2010, IntelliTrace is on my team, et cetera, et cetera. So if you like those features and you want to tell me about it, I'm here. I want to hear all that feedback. If you don't, you can talk to Sam. He's over here somewhere. No, want to hear it, and I'm glad to go to the... I think there's going to be some social afterwards, and we're going to eat and drink and stuff like that. Okay? So we're having a conversation around ALM these next 3 days, and we're having a... you've noticed at this point a lot of conversation around Agile. Yeah? You've heard Agile talked probably more than we've talked about ALM. Is that true? Agile? Raise your hands. We've been hearing that all day long, yeah? Okay. Why is that? And I think you saw earlier, Dave West and Ken Schwaber talking about how Agile is absolutely mainstream at this point. And when we start talking about application lifecycle management, we can't have that conversation without talking about Agile at the same time. I was just talking with Peter Provost, who just got back from TechEd Europe. And he said, listen, the biggest takeaway from this TechEd versus the last one was when I asked how many people are doing Agile, last year it was about, 35 to 40% of the room. This year he had to change the question and say, look, who's not doing Agile? And you had one or two folks raise their hand. So I think that's why you're seeing this emphasis. That said, this talk is actually a very simple conversation. I've got 6 slides to show you. And what this is about the issues as you start to say, hey, I've got an organization that wants to take advantage of this whole Agile craze. I think it was Dave West's or Schwaber's talk where they talked about the 3 reasons people are jumping onto Agile, one of which was, hey, it's a fad, and then there are other real reasons to do it. I want to talk about the issues with it. And I want to talk about the challenges that you'll experience when you go to it. Basically, the challenges that I have experienced as I've led a few Microsoft teams through this transformation to start taking advantage of Agile. And I want to talk about those common themes that I've seen us kind of trip over in each of the different teams that I have led. There's been a common thread, a common theme of common challenges that each team trips on, has problems with, wrestles with as they make that transformation. Okay, so I want to have a fairly candid conversation around what worked for us and mostly what challenges, what didn't work, that kind of thing. Okay? And as usual, if anyone has seen my talks before, I love it if we can have a conversation versus me just talking to you. So interrupt me as you'd like. I will repeat the question for the folks on the camera or behind the camera. Okay? All right. So I think I covered most of this. I do want to emphasize the last bullet on this. which is this is not a silver bullet prescription. So don't hear me talking to you, oh yeah, agile is difficult, but here's what you need to know, and you will be successful. That's not what this talk is about, okay? This talk is about the challenges. Here's how we wrestled through with them, but you are going to experience a lot of these pains yourself as you make the change over to agile. Let me stop for a second. How many folks are actually using agile in the workplace today? Show of hands. Okay, quite a few. For those who didn't raise their hands, I'm not going to just assume you're doing waterfall. Give me an idea of what you're doing right now. Say again? I'm sorry. Iterative. Okay. Okay. Anything else that people that you're doing that you wouldn't consider, you wouldn't call agile? That you want to just say again?
Unified process.
Okay, great. All right. Of those folks who aren't doing agile, are you thinking about moving to more of an agile, Scrum, Lean, whatever, XP? A few folks nodding their heads? Okay. So for the folks who have gone through the transition, at some point you went through that transition, I'd love it to hear, as you see some of the bullets that I'm going to go through here, I'd love to get your take on some of this, as well as capture some things that I maybe haven't captured in this talk. Okay? Now, with that said, there is this why go agile? You know, I think we talked about the fad, you know, everyone's doing it. I may not be on it, but I'm not going to tell you I'm doing waterfall because that's not cool, you know, that kind of thing. But there are real reasons, and I think you've gotten some of that today, on why people are going to agile. And I'd like to just talk about some of the reasons that I've experienced, some of the goodness that I have experienced as I have gone through this transition with a number of teams here at Microsoft. And we were building, you know, commercial products that are used by lots and lots of people, okay? This is not a comprehensive list of why I think Agile is the way to go. These are just some of the high-level bullets of a few of the reasons that I think it really makes sense. So the first one is, it's based on reality, it's empirical by nature, and it's fully transparent. Now, just saying you're doing Agile does not mean you suddenly are real transparent and you're working in reality and it's empirical, et cetera. This is a process conversation, okay? I think a lot of the conversation today has been about this will take some cultural change in order to make happen. But once you do, these are some of the benefits, okay? Embraces change, admits we are terrible at estimation. It basically says, look, we don't know how to do it, so let's not. Let's stop doing that, okay? And move forward. It empowers teams. Fundamentally, it empowers teams when done correctly. The best results that I have found when we are really cooking with gas are teams that are absolutely committed to results and feel like they are empowered to make the right decisions or they control their own destiny. That, when you feel that and you see your team cooking, it's a fantastic place to be in. It takes a lot of time, though, to really get there. Promotes running bits over documentation. A lot of you hear the, you know, Agile Manifesto, et cetera. I love this little quote that Mohsen Akcan and Tekla Fel. Setup.exe beats PowerPoint.exe every day of the week. And what that means is running bits, running code is your fundamental transparency in terms of where the project is. Right? At the end of the day, if you can run it and you can feel it and you can click on the menu items or you can exercise that API, that is the ultimate testament to where you are at and how that project is doing. Right? And that, I think, is really one of the things that an agile approach really promotes and pushes is reach for existing bits. Show me what you're talking about. So I can more firmly, you can think of it as throwing the clay on the table. I need to be able to manipulate it and see it in order to really make sure that I'm getting what I asked you to build, right? And I think that's a really important piece of this. I always talk to my teams. It's like, look, I see the spec, I see the status, the dashboards. We're using TFS like crazy internally. I see all that, but I am not going to feel good until I can run the bits. I need to feel how it feels from a user's perspective. I need to feel it. And finally, the last piece that I think is probably one of the most important pieces is that it promotes constant self and team improvement. This quote, as I was preparing this talk, I went and talked to a number of my dev leads, test leads, individual ICs to get their take. As they went through the process, what was their take? And one of them that I thought, a quote that I took from one of my dev leads, Alan Denver, I thought it was fantastic insight. Adopting agile practices reveals dysfunction within current practices, procedures, processes, and team dynamics. So why is that a benefit? Why is that a good thing? Right? Well, at this point, it exposes it so that you can actually fix it, right? Versus just kind of ignoring it. We're limping. We understand. We've been limping for a long time. I like to limp, right? But I'm not running. And what you really want is you want to be running, right? And until you shine a light in terms of what your current practices are, your current political, you know, bureaucracies are at, you don't know what you don't know. And that's one of the really great benefits of promoting this. How do we constantly improve? It's not a let's take a lot of time and just beat ourselves up after every sprint or iteration because we just are the cup half full kind of guys, you know. But it is a, man, we really did well. How do we continue to do well, or how do we improve that and do it better, faster this next time when we go into it? And when you get that as an integral part to your culture and how your team executes, again, that's magic. It really, really starts to just roll on itself. It's a fantastic thing. But that goes up and down and across the organization. It is not just the team that's executing. It's management and the team executing together. It's a very, very important concept. Does that make sense? Any questions about this? Anyone think I'm just crazy? That this is... It's Sam... Yeah, of course you are. All right. So now, lessons learned. I try to come up with a better title for this, like, you know, heads up, watch out, major pitfall, you name it. I tried to come up with it. Fundamentally, it's lessons learned or things to be aware of as your teams start to make this transition or after you've done it. Keep your eyes out for common patterns. I don't know. I also thought about saying, hey, maybe this is the smells around agile or anti-patterns or what have you. And I gave up and just finally said lessons learned. Okay? The first one is this. Visibility and transparency is scary. And yet it's at the heart of agility. And it's the core, and it's the most basic, most fundamental piece of it. I think Ken Schwaber this morning was talking about, hey, agility is all about transparency, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And how do you get there? And you got ALM tooling to help you shine a light on these things. But fundamentally, it's scary and it's difficult. It's very, very hard to get the transparency that you need in order to shine a light on yourself to say, hey, guys, you know what? We've actually been running around, and our left leg has been off this whole time. We have been hopping around trying to deliver software for years, right? That's very hard to do. And here's the typical things that you'll hear from your team. Things like this. Hey, we don't want you to write down how much, I'm not trying to track the hours that you're working on a particular project item. You know, I want to understand how much work is left, so I want to understand kind of what you've done, right? So I know we've got an estimate of, like, you know, it's 10 hours or what have you, and you just put 8 hours into it. Well, what do you have left? And to shine a light even on something as basic as that is very revealing, and your teams may feel like, man, get out of my Kool-Aid, you know, kind of thing. It's definitely one of these very difficult things for you to, you know, get across to your team that this is actually goodness, not only for them, but for management as well. How many folks are ICs, aren't managing people? Show of hands. Cool. So the rest of you are managing folks, engineering teams? Yeah? Okay. For the folks that have gone through have transferred over to agility, does this resonate? Has visibility been easy for you? Anyone was like, oh, no, our team, just no problem. Raise your hands. Okay. Yeah, very hard. Something you should go in with eyes wide open on this and spend time talking about how you're going to attack this. And visibility is more than just dashboards. Like Team Foundation Server, we've got all kinds of ways to track progress and, you know, we've got dashboards and what have you. And that's all fantastic. But again, this is more about the cultural clash potential. That is where the difficulty lies and not in the tooling. Make sense? Okay. Teams don't believe it. When you say to them, hey, what do you think you can get done? I'm not going to tell you what to get done. I need you to commit to what you tell me what you can get done. A lot of times they just don't believe it. They've especially if you've been in a very command and control like structure for a long time, where you've had a very strong leader who comes in and says, hey, I want you to take that hill right there, and I'm going to tell you how to get there. You need to go up this fast, this boom, 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 and then I'm going to meet you on the summit, right? Those kinds of teams will have a big problem trying to convince those teams that, hey, you actually are in control of your destiny. I need you to take that summit. But I'm not going to tell you how to do it. You've got to figure out how to do it. That is a very hard problem. Okay? And yet, again, fundamental. If they don't really truly believe that they are in control of their own destiny, then ultimately they're going to look to management or what have you, and when things go wrong, it's not my fault. You know, and fundamentally, you need the teams to be empowered so that they can make the right decisions, so they can commit to those results. And so fundamentally they can say, we own this problem. We've got to get this thing done, right? And here's what we can get done. That has been a really, really big challenge. And this one ultimately just takes time. Anyone read the Five Dysfunctions of a Team? Patrick Lencioni, I believe that's his last name. A few. If you haven't, highly recommend reading that one. Because at the bottom, at the base of his conversation about the five dysfunctions, I think the number one is trust. Right? And if you don't have that trust established, it's just not going to work. Does that make sense? All right. This is a great one. Let the teams make mistakes, just learn from them. So the way I talk to my teams about this, hey, listen, if you're going to make a mistake, make sure it is a hideous, go down in flames, there's bodies, there's blood, it's just disgust. I mean, just make a huge mistake. Because most likely, you're going to learn something from that one. Versus, oh yeah, we kind of screwed that up, but you know, it's okay. And you tend to not have a long conversation around why you sort of missed it or why you just had a little problem here. You're going to have a deep retrospective when something goes really badly wrong. Now, clearly, I'm not saying, hey, you know, go tell your teams to run off the cliff and let's talk about it afterwards, right? Not saying that. I'm just saying this critical piece of this conversation is have that conversation about what went wrong so that you can fix it and do it again. It's a classic thing where, oh boy, that manager there or that IC completely went in the wrong direction and they totally screwed up. One, there's two things you can do with that person. You can let them go, right? That person's never going to make that mistake again because I'm never going to see that person again, right? Or you take a different approach and you say, well, they screwed that up so badly, I'm pretty sure they can't do that again, right? That was so painful. I really, really doubt that they're going to do that again. And then if they do it again, well, then that's easy at that point, right? Done. I'm sure you guys have talked about what done means, right? You've talked about done. You've heard teams talk about, oh, yeah, done, you know. Or no. We talk about done. It's done, right? What is done? And everyone having a conversation about what exactly done means and what does that mean at sprint boundaries? Huge, huge problem. And one that is easy to miss when you're getting into this for the first time is you don't have a deep conversation around done. And what does done mean, not just in terms of the end result, the end project, but what does done mean at the sprint boundaries, right? And you need to have a shared understanding of what done means. And more and equally important, talk about what it doesn't mean, you know? And I'll tell you, at Microsoft, you can't imagine our done list. Our exit criteria is enormous. When you talk about our exit criteria, when we ship product, so by the time we ship product, our exit criteria is this monster scorecard of red, green. It's just insane how much stuff that we got to make sure is locked down before we ship product. Well, do we apply that same exit criteria at every sprint boundary? No, we couldn't possibly do the whole gamut of exit criteria at sprint boundary. Okay, well then if we're not doing all of it, then which ones do we do? You know? Are we going to worry about localization in sprint one? Are we going to do security testing in sprint two? You know, having all these, that kind of conversation is a very important, must-have conversation that many, many teams forget about. They just start jumping into it. Does that resonate with folks? Have you done that? Is done a big problem? Or do you guys have a pretty good, I'm seeing a lot of this, oh yeah, done, yeah. Yeah. This one took me, I don't know, call it 3 years to actually fully understand why this is actually important. The shorter the sprint, the better. And it really comes down to a very simple reason for this. There's lots of reasons why shorter is better. But the fundamental one is kind of goes back to that empower the teams to commit to the sprint backlog and to commit to the work that they are needing to do. I have found that it is easier to shield the team from all the extraneous issues coming in if the sprint is short. So, you know, the concept is this. Let's say you've got a 3-week sprint, okay? The very worst message to an external stakeholder who's asking the team to do something, the very worst message to that person is if they come in on day one of the sprint, you have to tell them, we're not going to be able to get to this for 3 weeks, okay? That's the day one. If that person comes in the second week, you got 2 weeks. You got to wait, and then we will rejigger our sprint commit to get this on there. You see what I mean? But if the sprint is 1 week, then it's like, yeah, I get that. That's a real important thing. Awesome. We're going to get that, and we'll start. We'll have that conversation Monday when we do the next sprint planning meeting. And if we all agree that that's a high priority issue, we'll attack it. You only have 1 week to wait. Okay. That is a, I don't know why that took so long for that to sink in, but it just took a long time to just kind of just internalize why that is. Because then when the things that come in actually must happen, it makes it really easy to understand why it must happen. Oh yeah, that's a high price security issue when we got to do a hot fix. Yep. We got to do that now. So let's talk about what that means to the rest of our sprint because that must happen now. It can't wait 2 to 3 weeks. You see what I mean? The question was, how long is our typical sprint? Right now, my team's doing 3 week sprints. But this is another one of those folks ask that question and they look for the magic answer. And the real answer is it depends on your team. It depends on your project. It depends on so many different things. The only thing I can tell you is make it short. Whatever that means to you, make it short. You know, what I do know is longer sprints, you know, the opposite of this, is badness. Right? It seems basic, but it's just the truth. And the thing is, when you are transitioning into this, a team's inclination, because they don't you can't get their head around done. Hey, we can't do anything in 4 weeks. What are you talking about? You know, I got to ship this feature. It's going to take me at least, you know, 3 months to make it, you know, do anything. Right? All these things come together to make that the team is going to want longer sprints. It's going to be their nature as they walk into the sprint planning sessions. They're going to want to say, yeah, okay, this agile thing, that's cool, but if you give me 6 week sprints, yeah, we can make this work. Yes. Yes. Great comment. When teams are going into it, you know, you got to be careful about they, because they're struggling with so many issues. This will exacerbate, you know, all those potential issues and they get just stuck. Right. So absolutely. You got to use common sense. You got to work with your teams. We have definitely done a very common strategy here is to start longer. And then as the team gets up to speed and they start to see the adjustments that need to make, then you start to shorten it. Yep. Done all those things. Yep.
One of the disadvantages with long sprint is you tend to include too much content. And the more content you put in the sprint, the greater your chance of failure.
Yeah. The comment was the longer the sprint, the more content, the greater your chances of failure. Yep. And that does come back to that whole the sprint commit concept and what is it that you think you can get done. And a lot of times, if you start to go beyond the 2 to 3 week time frame, you're going to start to get in that magic wag. You know, you guys have all seen this. Hey, how long to get that done? And it's the magic 2 weeks, you know. And everyone has heard that from their lead most rock star devs. How long to get that piece of feature functionality done? I don't know, 2 weeks? You know, it's amazing. Everything's 2 weeks long, right? How long are we going to get that? Is it going to take, I don't know, 2 weeks? You come back, hey, are we done? Oh, I don't know, 2 more weeks. You know, yeah. Yeah, so the question is, Don't you worry about the sprints as they get too short, that you've got a lot of overhead, a lot of taxes that you're paying, and you end up just like, you know, 1 day of actual deving, you know, and testing, you know, that kind of thing? Yeah, that can happen. That's why I can't tell you for your organization, 2 weeks is the magic number, because I don't know what kind of bureaucratic overhead and taxes that you have to pay. This is, you know, you have to weigh all these things because, you know, fundamentally you're trying to figure out, what does your team need to execute? And it's also very interesting, though, that if your team is coming back to and saying to you, hey, I need a 4 week sprint because 2 of those weeks I'm in meetings, right? Well, you could start to have a conversation. Really? 2 weeks of worth of meetings? You know, this is back to that, you know, this is work. It's been working forever. But we got half our team just doing these meetings. What happens if we shoot the meetings in the head? You know, but you're absolutely, you know, this is part of the challenge here.
If we started with 4 week sprints and we started measuring velocity and we determined approximately how many velocity points we could knock out in those sprints, and then we just started adjusting things and we came to the decision that we moved moved into 2-week sprints, and those work really well for my team based on what we do.
Yep.
So there's no right or wrong about it, but you got to start somewhere, and that's what we finally had to do is just say, look, we're starting here.
Yep.
And we'll figure this out, and we learn from our mistakes, and now we have a roadmap.
Yep. Great comment was, look, we started at 4 weeks. We started measuring velocity, and we got down to 2 weeks, and it worked for your team. But again, it really does depend on your team. Okay? Great comments. This seems really straightforward. Priority execution is critical. What you will see when you start to do this with your teams is the tendency to, they commit to a sprint backlog, and you know, 9 times out of 10, the first few sprints, you will get this smattering of things in progress. You know, you got half your list is in progress. Well, did we get anything done? Well, I mean, you know, we got 75% of the items on our list are in progress. We're making good progress. But nothing's done. Is that what you're telling me? Well, what's your definition of done? And, you know, and then we're back into this whole done conversation, right? And you know, and this is another one of these critical things that just, it's so easy to slip up on this because your team is actually they're trying to do the right thing, right? But you know, and they're trying to touch, they're trying to knock down a bunch of risk potentially in these other issues that they're worried about. You know, because you guys didn't quite prioritize this thing higher and we committed to it, you know, I'm still worried about that risk there. So I'm going to kind of just go dabble over here a little bit to try to shine a light on some of that risk before I actually go do the things that I think is actually pretty straightforward, not worried about those things, right? That's a really common problem. It's a problem that I experience with my teams today. And again, it's not that they're just purposely, you know, just trying to do it wrong. It's just they're, you know, it's very difficult to just say, I'm going to just go top to bottom. I'm going to do that first one, and I'm just going to nail that thing and get that thing done. And that's more than just dev. That's test, right? I'm going to go do UX, you know, testing with that. I mean, that's what done is. And then I'm going to move on, you know. It's you've got to do that. If there's one thing on here that's really simple, that's a real simple one and a real easy one that you as a manager can help your team. Folks in my team kind of know at this point, don't go into a sprint commit or sprint review with Cameron and have half your stuff freaking in progress and nothing done, right? Don't do that, you know, because you're going to hear about it.
Cameron, isn't that just earned value from the waterfall approach?
I'm sorry.
Isn't what you're describing there just earned value from the waterfall approach?
Isn't that just earned value from the waterfall approach? I don't know what you mean.
Earned value is you only earn the value of a task when it's completely done.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely right. And I think that this is wherever it's come from, that it could very well be. I think the bottom line is that you aren't going to experience the goodness of these if you don't finish them and put them in the bank. You know, my director of test, Mark Midland, is constantly talking about what can I put in the bank today? What are we done with? You know, and if I can't start shoveling some stuff into the bank and just lock that away and be done, then I've got a general overall kind of smell about where we are in terms of velocity, right? You're constantly looking for those canary in the coal mine, the smells in terms of your project, and this is one of them. Does that make sense? Okay. How are we doing? Dependency management is really hard. Now, I'm not talking about dependency management in source and components. That's also really hard, but I've got some cool tools that I could show you that helps with that. I'm talking about dependency management across teams. It's a very difficult problem, and we experience it here at Microsoft in a big way. When you are talking about, hey, I'm taking a dependency on such and such team, that such and such team may have completely different goals, completely different principles, completely different definitions of what done means than your team, right? And when you are in that situation, that gets very hard to deal with. And what ends up happening is you got to do a bunch of different things. There's a lot of conversation, clearly, between the two teams in terms of how you are going to do that handshake, you know, and to drive clarity into what that interaction must look like. You kind of have to spend more time with it than you would have thought, right? It is absolutely can be done and is doable. We do it here at Microsoft all the time, but it is one of the more difficult things in the process, especially when you mix radically different team cultures, right? I think someone today asked the question, hey, what do you do when you've got a agile team working with a waterfall team? What does that look like? How do you deal with that, right? And the answer is, you know, carefully. You know, you have to be very explicit about it. You know, you have to very much understand, here's our expectations. Here's what done means for us, and here's what we need from you, and we need it by such and such time frame, you know, that kind of thing. It, again, no silver bullet here. It's just plain hard to do. Okay? Are there some organizations here that have this problem? You've got agile teams who are dependent on non-agile teams. Show of hands. Lots. Yep. Give me an example. Someone, give me an example how you're dealing with it. Okay.
Platforms where you have to deliver a piece of hardware at a milestone.
Okay.
So the
general question is, or the general answer to that was just real strict milestones, et cetera, on deliverables. That sounds like that's going from an agile team is taking a dependency on a waterfall team. What about the other way around? Anyone have that situation? Waterfall guys taking a dependency on an agile team? You know, because here's what you'll get, right? What do you mean, man? You're asking me what am I going to have done in 3 months, dude? This is agile, baby. You know, and that, by the way, is a cop out. That isn't right. You know, that's where folks start to use agile as an excuse in some cases, right? Because you should be able to have this conversation around. Here's the goals of these next few sprints. Here's what I believe we should be able to get done, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? That tends to be a harder conversation, though, because the waterfall guys want to have a very, very explicit, specific conversation about what exactly is going to ship 3 months from now.
Not only the waterfall guys, but the owner of the software.
Yeah.
The person paying for it.
That's right. Exactly. Waterfall, stakeholders, et cetera. This is I was just talking with E.T. and Mario right before this, and this is a significant issue of how do you get folks who have classically, you know, higher-level stakeholders, let's say, who have classically dealt with software project in a very much an accounting-like fashion, you know, on such and such date, this is when we'll see this kind of functionality come online, et cetera, et cetera. It's very difficult to get them kind of situated with, you know, the agile way of going about things for a number of these reasons. But that's something to be, you know, you got to think about. And what does that look like? And fundamentally, for an agile team to really, really succeed, it's up and down the chain, in terms of the management chain, you must have support. Okay? You know, the dependency that I think is also very difficult, you know, we've talked about the classic waterfall guys, and they've embraced the fact that they're waterfall, and they're totally fine with that, taking a dependency or not with agile guys. The more difficult one, actually, is the guys that think they're doing agile, but really they're not. You know, internally we call this like scrummer fall, you know. And those tend to be pretty difficult to deal with because you think you're having the right conversation, and you're not, you know. So then you have this visibility, you have this transparency, you have this glossary clash that starts to happen. Okay? Any other comments about that? Okay. Who's heard this one before? Yeah? Yeah, this is classic. You start doing this, and it's like, you know, I don't get this thing, man. Stanza, it's just a total waste of time. We just get in there, hey, what'd you do yesterday? Yeah, I fixed a bug. What are you going to do tomorrow? I'm going to fix a bug. You know? Got any problems? No, I've got to fix a bug, you know? Classic, right? And this is, again, one of these things where the team hasn't quite figured out why, you know, a stand-up is a great way to understand where they are right now, you know? A great realization of this that I love to talk about, had this fantastic dev on the team. Everybody loved this guy. Great guy. He was so into it, very much into the project. He should pour his heart and soul into these things, right? We're burning down the sprint backlog, and we started doing the stand-ups, and this person would have a tendency in the past to kind of go a little off into the weeds a little bit, but he'd come back eventually. But in the stand-up, he would come in and say, you know what, I ran into this little problem, which made me go run off course a little bit to go, and I really think our problem is way over here. And at that point, you can have a conversation around whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. Versus if you didn't have a stand-up, that could have been 2 weeks that you just flushed, gone. Versus we just lost 24 hours from that guy's productivity. And it was a significant realization for the team. Not even management, for the team realized, that was what Bob, he was going off on a tangent, and we just stopped him from doing that. Bob, actually, you don't need to worry about that because of X, Y, or Z reason. Actually, stay on course here. Okay. I get it. You know? But the stand-up is not, if you're not having some conversation around risk and impediments, and you're just having that kind of conversation where, oh, yeah, I'm fixing a bug, just fixing that bug, then you're not having the right stand-up. You're not, your scrum master isn't having the, or however you're doing agile. By the way, I didn't even stop to say, agile methodologies, there's a bazillion of them. Internally, we tend to use scrum or a variation thereof. We have a tendency to do scrum and lean kind of squished together. But even that, we have done what works for our team. So we've done some things that are very by the book and some things that aren't. And that's also quite typical. And don't beat yourself over it. Beat yourself up over it if you aren't following it per the letter of the law. That's also quite common that I've seen and experienced. Okay? This stand-up's a waste of time, very typical of teams just getting into it. So this one was hard. And, I'm showing this deck to a couple guys who are, really, really religious about, agile is absolutely the way to go, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth of the matter is, you can pretty much bank on the fact that your first 4 to 6 sprints, and I'm being euphemistic here, learning sprints, depends on your team, but it could be a disaster, in terms of all the reasons we were just talking about. Like, oh, let's say I got really hardcore about the whole agile thing, and man, we're doing 1 week sprints. And, and then we're going to go do, we're going to plan the first day, and then we're going to have dashboards, and we're going to throw the chicken at people who break the build, and, you could go crazy with this stuff, right? And then you get nothing done. And that is, you have to build into your kind of like capacity planning the fact that you're not going to be at 100% capacity day one. The team has to learn how to do it. You got to kind of experience some of this goodness before you actually start to really kick in, right? And if you just go into it and you manage expectations from stakeholders, et cetera, appropriately, then you will have a less of a hard time getting through this initial learning curve, okay? But this has been my experience for sure on this. It's been pretty consistent with teams that have never done Agile to teams that jump into Agile. It takes 4 to 6 sprints to really get cooking. Anybody experience otherwise? You went from just cold to just velocity day one? I'd love to hear about that. How'd you do that? Anyone? Okay, is 4 to 6, does that resonate? Is it longer for some folks, Mike? Yeah, 4 to 6? Shorter for some? It's around 4 to 6, it feels like. This is like, you know, after 3 teams, and now I'm seeing this with my team right now, we're about 5 sprints in, and I'm starting to see good things start to happen. You know, and we're starting to see the velocity start to kick in. So I'm expecting us to be really cooking with gas in another 2. You know, and I'm not going to angst about it, because I kind of know. Yep, hey, I'm just glad to see some working bits. You guys are doing really well. You know. But that's, you know, that took a long time to actually feel comfortable with that and to help your teams get through it as quick as you can. Hey, listen, if you can get this down to 2 to 3 sprints, fantastic, you know, clearly, right? But this is, you know, I think reality. Any questions about that? Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, what's the silver bullet to get through those 4 to 6 sprints? And the way to not do this is to go to upper management and say, hey, we're not going to get anything done for 4 to 6 sprints. Like, that's not the way to do it. The way you do it from that perspective is to say, hey, we're not going to be cooking on all cylinders for about 4 to 6, but you're going to see some results. We're going to get some stuff done. It's just you're going to, I'm banking on the fact that our velocity, although it's going to start like this, we're actually going to start to see it go like this once the team gets more in tune with what's going on, right? That's the first thing. So you got to start managing expectations appropriately. And then with the team, then it's just a matter of making sure you guys are, you know, having these conversations and making sure that, your leads and your management is understanding kind of all the issues that you're going to wrestle with as you get into this, and you try to nail down these things as quickly as possible. Have those conversations about what done means. You know, have the conversations around, hey, dev test interaction, what does that look like in this new model? It is not, hey, we're going to dev for a week or 2 and then give it to test, because then they feel like they're getting shortchanged. You know, they only get a week, whereas they had much longer. Have those conversations, you know, as early as possible, right? But to answer your question, what's the silver bullet? Man, if I had a silver bullet, I'd be building some cool tooling that would answer that one for you. You know, again, it's a lot of these things, and then get the tooling in there to shine a light on the issues that are plaguing you, and get that done as quick as possible. Yeah. Yep. That's a great question. So the question is, I've got a geographically dispersed team. How do we do this? Yep, and it just got a lot harder. You know, bottom line is you have a hard time with just a small team of 7 who are sitting in the same hallway. You're going to have these issues. Now, sprinkle in some different cultures, sprinkle in a 12-hour time difference. Now, these things just get exacerbated by that. And so, you know, the need to have face-to-face conversations and, you know, over-communicate the issues is very important in those situations. We do it. We have teams here in India. We have teams in Denver, Shanghai, Cambridge, you know. But we do it. And you know, you just have to be aware of where the challenges are going to be there. But you have added challenges when you're geographically dispersed. Question back there.
Can I run in my mind?
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Keith, man, you're just taking way too much time. Oh, Keith, you're killing me.
I did. All right. A real-life scenario that I had to deal with. And first of all, I agree with everything you said up there. Done is done is done and all that. But here's my issue that I ran into a few months ago. We're starting a new project that's been tried for about 4 years. And so I came in, go do it through an agile process where we use Scrum. And they brought in the board of directors who's going to invest all this money into this project. And then they bring me in towards the end, and they said, what are you going to have done in 5 months?
Uh-huh.
And my comment was, I've got to find out what about the team. I've got to understand what our team is made up of. We need to get through a few processes. And I'll let you know in about 3 months what we can deliver in 6 months. And the comment that came back from the CEO was, that was the wrong answer. They're not going to invest in the company.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yep. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. That is a very difficult problem. So you've got a project that has not made any progress in 4 years, and then they're asking you, how do you fix this? And I need it delivered in 5 months.
You got it.
Yep. Yeah.
Next.
Yep. And you just so well. My only suggestion in that one would be, let me get back to you in 2 weeks. You know, and let me attack this one bite at a time. But we've got 4 years of history behind us that says this is not an easy answer to solve. Right. And you're new to the team, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's a very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we gave them, but yep. It's the wrong answer, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Another question.
Cam, how do you deal with new teams, new resources, as far as training and education on the agile techniques and the hybrid that you're using?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So there's a number of different ways to do it. We absolutely will. We've done scenario focused engineering, especially this round in our next version of Visual Studio, where we've put all the teams through deep training. Actual classroom level training. We most certainly throw Schwaber's black book at them, and say at least read the first couple chapters. You don't have to read it all. Just at least understand what we're talking about when we say agile and Scrum, and understand the difference between product backlog and sprint backlogs, etc. We have a tendency, and this can go one way or another. We've done a teams that have done it already, kind of get with other teams that the guys that haven't done it, and get those guys so you do the peer learning kind of thing. We've done that as well. But getting a professional consultant in to teach the team as quickly as possible is absolutely the way to go that I would highly recommend. I think we've got a lot of, especially when you are talking about, the other thing I would recommend is that this is a process and tooling issue, right? You can talk about the processing and you could talk about it theoretically, but a lot of times teams have a hard time connecting the dots if you're not making it salient to them, right? So a great way to do this is, hey, give me an example of something that you're facing at work, right? And let's attack that as a classroom-like exercise, and go about that and talk about how you would approach that with your tooling that you have in place, or what have you, right? Try to make it as real and less theoretical as possible is kind of what we do there. Uh-oh. Okay. One over here.
Yes. You've transformed 3 teams since 2005. Is that correct?
That is true. Can you stand up?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, there you are. Yes, that's true.
So I was curious if you could clarify what a team is.
Ah, sure. So the team here, so think of a team here ranging from size of about 50. So two of the teams were about the size of about 50 folks up to like 100 or so. that kind of size of team. So clearly, you know, many scrum teams. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, so did you do that in stages? Scrum team by scrum team? How did you conquer?
No, we did the whole team. We break it down into feature crews, which are about 7 folks around. We try to do that. But we did it all at once. So what we didn't do is say, hey, half the team, we're going to do that agile thing, and half the team, you just keep cranking. We didn't do that. We said, we're going to go all in, you know, and we're going to get folks the training they need and that kind of thing, and broke it down that way. Peter. Oh, there you go. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Got a product owner question.
Yeah. Worked
for a couple software companies that were using Scrum and had dedicated product managers, product owners, took that role fairly seriously. Now found myself working for more of an IT organization in a company that doesn't sell software.
Yeah.
But uses it, you know, obviously to make money a variety of ways in their business. There's a very diverse set of stakeholders that have similar but unique requirements, and have found it challenging to get a consistent product owner voice or to have the company just nominate a person as a product owner, and we struggle a lot with that. I was wondering if you could comment.
Yeah. We have that here in a big way, because when we are talking about shipping our product to the millions of people who are using this product, who's the product owner in that case? You know, any kind of commercial product project is difficult from that perspective. But it does come down to, look, pick one, somebody, anybody, right? You're the product owner. It is your job to get in the head of your customer. And you must become a significant customer advocate and know deeply what the business needs, you know, as far as what this project is out to deliver. And then you just anoint. You are the product owner, you know. And that's the only way. It's probably not the only way. It is one way that I've seen work quite well. You need to make that fairly explicit.
Thanks.
Yep. About priority, sorry.
Yeah.
Do you always approve of the customer's priority when you decide on tasks that your team will do, or do you have your internal priority process when you decide what to do in each sprint?
So how do we come up with the priorities in the product backlog versus the sprint backlog?
Yep.
Very, very difficult. We spend a lot of time on that. A lot of input goes into that. So, you know, everything from like Microsoft Connect bugs to customer visits to internal customer advocates that we, you know, we're talking to all the time go into that conversation. The thing that I would say to you is we do that every sprint, right? We have that conversation every sprint, and we reevaluate. Are our priorities correct, right? From a product backlog perspective, are they correct? Any new information that's saying, no, this item should move up and this one should move down. We're constantly having that conversation.
So a follow-up on that is do you have, what values do you have for priority? Is it just going in or not going in and that's it? Or do you have some kind
customer
of value?
Value. End value. That's it. Right? Now, that's the most important from our perspective, and there are real reasons why you may have to say, I'm going to need to sacrifice potentially a customer value in order to enable, you know, some longer term vision that we have, maybe, you know, because you got a resource and you got a runway, and you can only get so much done in a particular time. So that's where the hard conversations start to happen, right? Okay. I'm almost done.
All right. One more question for you.
Ah,
sorry. Right here.
There you are. There you go.
Have you noticed any difference in acceptance and velocity for teams that are working within an existing architectural framework versus those teams that are trying to lay down brand new architectural framework?
Let me see if I understand exactly what you mean. Are you saying see differences in velocity in regards to a team that is working on existing code versus old or versus new project?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, we're a mainframe shop that are converting off of, and so we're having a whole learning curve onto new frameworks, new architectural frameworks as well?
I don't think so. I don't believe so. We've done it both ways. So when I first got here, we built the database professionals product, the Data Dude, mm-hmm. and that was brand new from scratch, and we experienced all kinds of pain because we're doing it from scratch. And then we've done it with the architecture product, where we had it, it's already existing, and we had to figure out what to do with that. And then now we've got all of our, the debugger and IntelliTrace and all these things. These are existing assets, and the problems are different, but I haven't seen any, you're going to be much faster in a new project versus not, because then you have issues around what is it that we're building versus we need to just hone what we've got. And that, again, there's, gray areas here.
Thank you.
Okay. This is an important one. I am almost out of time here, aren't I, Keith? You're kicking me off.
Well, you are, but I don't want to cut you off if there's one or two more questions.
I got one or two.
Okay. One or two.
Should I? You guys want to see the last couple?
Yeah.
Okay. Real quick. Sprint reviews should be celebrated, not questioned. So this is one that I just experienced just recently where the team came in and they showed what they got done, and my management team ripped them apart. Right? And that was not conducive to team empowerment because, hey, I thought we all did that sprint commit thing together, and that's what we all agreed to, et cetera, et cetera. This is about, hey, we all committed to, and this is what we got done. So let's just celebrate what we got done, and then let's have the harder conversation in terms of next sprint commit. What is it that we need to get done? That's an important one. Learn that the hard way. Okay, last one. Scrum of Scrums is very hard. Okay. Scrum of Scrums is basically you've got lots of Scrum teams, and you need to understand how they're all accruing up to a final deliverable, let's say. Okay? We've got that in spades here at Microsoft, where we've got lots of teams that are all building functionality that accrues into a final product that we then make available. It is very difficult to effectively do Scrum of Scrums. This is where you've got to have tooling and process in place to help you with this. Because each team, it goes back to that team empowerment angle. The teams need to be empowered to do the things that they believe is the way they need to work, right? Well, it turns out that this team over here, who's all part of your bigger team, this team wants to execute a little bit differently than this one, and this one wants to execute a little bit differently here, right? Well, then you need to be real clear about what done means from a higher level perspective. What is it that management needs to see in terms of output from those teams, from the metrics we're going to look at, the visibility that we require? And that, again, is just another version of that done conversation. It's just a little higher up. It's a little bubbled up. Okay? But again, difficult to do, especially when we start talking about geographically dispersed sites or just big teams, right? Something to be aware of. And again, you've got to kind of take the same kind of things that you would do for an individual team. Those kinds of issues are going to be there for an individual sprint team. When I talk about sprint team, that's like five to seven is like ideal. Getting bigger than that, things start to get more difficult. Doing that across many teams, hard to do. Okay. I think I am pretty much done.
Are you done?
I'm done. That's good. After this one, I am done. let me just summarize this by just saying, look, if there's any advice I could give you, is these last two bullets, which is how do we do this better? Constantly ask your team and yourself, right? If you're a manager of a team, I highly recommend you look in the mirror and you say, what did you do to either help or hurt our team velocity last sprint, right? And then, of course, you ask the team, how do we do this better? What do we need to do, right? And you constantly ask that. If you drive that into the culture of your team, you're going to experience goodness, whether it's agile, scrummer fall, waterfall, I don't care what you call it. That's a good thing. Okay? And then always remember, setup.exe beats powerpoint.exe every day of the week. If your team comes in and they're showing you click-throughs, fantastic. So next sprint, we're going to see running bids, right? Yeah. If you're showing me click-throughs next time, I want to have a harder conversation. You know, that kind of thing. Running bits. You want running bits. Thanks for coming, folks. I appreciate it.